moved, and they contact the school and say, wait a minute, I got passed over. What does the charter school do? Do they put them at the top of the list? Do they say, too bad, you can't get in? What's the procedure?
Dr. Patton will answer.
Right, we look at the date that the application, and we do put them up according to that date. If it means going above all the other children in there, we do put them back on the list.
Okay, so then that solves, they're still in, they're at the top of the waiting list. But I really like this 25 people each semester. I think that's a good way to figure out if everything's current. And I agree with Mr. Spence. The phone call is important because parents want to move on it too.
I mean, yeah, but you have to be able to document that you're following the waiting list. But if you can get someone in faster, I don't have a problem with that.
So that will know to everyone who's next on the list, right? Which I think is what Spence is saying.
Oh.
So if you can get them in through a telephone call, get them in. If you can't reach them by phone, then you go letter.
But that's the process that we laid out.
So what time did you put down?
No. I never.
Mine is at 1:30.
That's what.
So which line is it?
I think if we just say.
Just the point of clarity.
Sure.
I think if we just say the telephone call to the next person on the list.
Mm-hmm.
If that gets an affirmative, the person's enrolled.
And then what?
Yeah. And then we'll go to the next person on the list, I guess. If we can't, we'll send a letter. We've already sent a letter to the top 25 each semester, so we'll send a letter to that person. If they don't respond, we'll go to the next person on the list.
Okay.
So that seems fair.
All right.
I think we're good.
Okay.
The next item was in regard to...
Wait. I don't know what we're good on. I'm sorry. Can you just... What have we just agreed to?
I think what I heard, so let me see if I can repeat it. I think what we heard is that we will do a letter to the top 25 people in each grade, each semester, to try and obtain positive confirmation that they are either interested or not interested in remaining on the waiting list. And based on that, if someone obviously says they're not any longer interested in enrolling, we will drop them from the wait list. If they say they are interested in remain interested in enrolling, we will leave them on the wait list in the order in which they currently sit on the waiting list. To the extent there's a vacancy, we will make a phone call to the family to attempt to enroll them. If that's successful, then the kid will be enrolled, obviously, immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason that's not successful, we will send a letter to the family in an attempt to reach them by mail. If that meets with no response or meets with a we're not interested anymore, then we will move to the next person on the waiting list.
We won't have any receipt.
Furthermore,
we'll have the call that we could periodically call just
right.
to make sure.
And further extent, I mean, the updating process hopefully will keep us current with
right.
the most recent address. If they're serious about staying, if they're
right.
what do they use? If they're meaningfully interested.
Sure.
They're going to notify you with the correct address and phone number changes. So. Beyond that, is extraordinary.
Is there any reason you can't do a call and the letter the same day? That way, if you get hold of the person, great. Otherwise, the letter is already going out. That shortens your time in waiting for a response.
I think that's fine.
I think that's just
do you have an objection to a regular letter going out?
It just seems redundant. But yeah.
If we reach them by phone, we're done.
If we don't reach them, we got a 44 cents in the mail that day. I mean, it's a done deal. I don't have to do both.
I have to say I am concerned in regard to doing both because it's the reason why you only send like a legal document one way. You don't have multiple ways in sending it by a proof of service. You send it one way, and that's the official way. I'd rather instead of mixing and matching, instead of doing it in combo, I'd rather have it telephone call if that doesn't work than the letter. I think it would avoid confusion and allow for better documentation as to what they responded to.
But it delays them getting a response because, according to here, they're going to wait 5 business days for a return call. And so how is that going to work? When will the letter go out?
I think if they don't get them on the phone, it goes out. That's what they do.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah, but they get them on the phone, they're not going to mail it.
Exactly. Make sure the letter goes out the same day.
I had a question. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. You indicated top 25 people in each grade. I thought it was just top 25 on the list in period.
No, because
each grade
because it differs.
Grade level. right. because the lottery is done by grade level. So they're not, if they're a kindergartner, they're not eligible for a vacancy in the fifth grade.
Right.
So therefore, we have to notify. The goal is to make sure, as President Cox said, that we have the most up-to-date contact information for every single person who might reasonably have a chance of being admitted that year if there was a vacancy. Okay. That's the goal.
Okay.
Okay, the next item was in regard to number 7, voter-approved measures. Now, that is in regard, what my language says in my typical operational MOU is that they are not entitled to benefits of any prior tax or bond measure elections, and at the same time, and then inevitably a charter school returns and says, but you must meet and confer with us prior to going out for any bond election. My recommendation would be...
We don't do a bond election.
relatively moot, but okay.
Remove that provision from the
operation. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, what about to the extent that they've already, in effect, already participated in, you know, the existing bond measure that we had and that? I mean, I don't want to exclude
it's
them.
It's a different entity, though.
Huh?
It's a different entity.
It's a different entity?
Yeah, this is a different entity. This is a nonprofit, yeah. So it's a different entity. Right. So you they're not entitled to the same thing the previous entity was, right?
I don't know about that,
well,
but
I
mean it's
huh? You know, I mean if it's a district building and we've dedicated it to district building.
I mean it's you know building. We've already spent and utilized all the money anyway, so you know it's sort of moot in that level. And then going forward, if it's a meet and confer. Do you have a problem with a meet and confer going forward?
I'm for taking it out.
Huh?
If we're taking consistent, yeah. You said take it out. I'm for taking it out.
The only reason why we were suggesting meet and confer language was just simply because if the charter is going to continue to occupy district facilities and the district is obligated to conduct the major maintenance and repairs on the facility, it would only make sense that if you were ever going to do a bond measure that you would probably want to take care of your obligations out of that bond measure as opposed to using general fund dollars. So our thought process was just that if we did a meet and confer, that might be an opportunity to share information, and that by sharing information, you might be able to make an informed choice about whether you would want to or not want to. We're not saying that you must include us in allocations of bond measure money. We're just saying we think it might be valuable to have a meet and confer and talk. That's all.
But we can, since that's our school anyway, determine if the bond money was going to go to that school.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what we did before. We looked at what schools needed the money and how much money, and we didn't have enough to do everything we needed to do. So I don't even think that we need to meet and confer, because of course we're going to try to take care of all of our schools.
And the other thing is there's nothing to preclude. If we remove it, there's nothing to preclude us from meet and conferring anyway. I just don't like to have the contractual obligation to do so. So that I started it. It's my fault. I shouldn't have put it in my proposed operational MOU anyway.
Okay.
But if the sides, if the board gives direction,
you
the sides
pull
agree,
it?
Yeah.
I'd like to do
pull it.
Exactly.
Pull it, Mike. We'll pull it. We got three. Pull it. Bruins.
Sure.
Eight.
Bruins. Who won the game? Did it? Was that tonight? Come on. It's 11:00.
Eight.
Give me a break. Was that tonight?
Eight.
Chris.
Eight. Oh,
okay. Tomorrow. Okay. Thanks.
Eight.
Okay. Security. This was the security and under the facilities use agreement. There was just a paragraph that Mr. Simmons and I had not had the opportunity to clarify, which is there is a provision in the proposed facilities use agreement that the charter had prepared that discussed. That they've included language requiring the district to provide security to the campus However, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't.
I mean, if we're talking about a fire alarm to protect our buildings, we'll pay for that.
Take it out.
If it's we're not going to provide, you know, a security, an individual guards there or police services or anything else.
The alarm system.
Yeah. Yeah, you pay for the call-outs. Yeah, but we'll pay for the...
Security
We want to protect the building.
Yeah, you stated what our objective was, which we're just seeking to maintain the alarm system that's there because the district, it's district property.
If they forget to turn off the alarm or do something like that, that's on them. But it's, okay, all right. Number nine.
What did we just agree to on?
No, so it's alarm systems?
To clarify that we'll just have an alarm system at the site.
Yeah, because security means people to me, so.
Yeah, yes, it's not.
Right, I didn't want an SRO.
No people.
Yeah, security means people.
Finally, indemnification. I had proposed a one-way indemnification provision in the MOU. They came back, it's once again, I invite problems, but they had proposed to have mutual indemnification in the agreement. That is pretty much the way that I've been negotiating agreements where there's mutual indemnification under the operational MOU. I just wanted to make sure.
Absolutely.
That
sort
of
That's fine.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, you know what? We take like a 3-minute break. I'm looking at Mr. Sabatino, and he's obviously in distress, so I don't want him to miss a point here. So we'll come back at 11 o'clock.
Number nine, we're just okay?
You know what?
Yeah. No, we're just mutual.
Okay. I don't know.
We got four left.
Cammy, you have other issues?
Yeah.
You have other issues?
No.
Did you have any others?
Do we know where Mike is?
He's right there.
Oh.
Somebody will do something by then. There's a lot of people in front of the cliff before us.
This legislature's got to go.
There's a lot of people in front of the cliff before us. That's true.
What does that do? Does
all right.
That records everything?
If we could, please. I'm off. Yeah, go ahead. We'll go back in just 1 minute.
I went through questions that wouldn't make us sit here.
I'm sorry?
I went through all my questions so we wouldn't have to sit here.
Thanks. That's nice of you. I appreciate that. Thank you. As long
as long as you got a positive resolution.
Yeah, I do. It was like a little clarification. Because most has already been addressed.
I'm going to leave it open abroad, so that includes you. Abroad for the whole thing. You know, it's not been insane. Anything that's not.
We make our best decisions at 2 a.m.
That's still, they can hold the vote.
No, actually, we did have a meeting.
People
don't know that. Yeah, we went to 2 a.m. So the next, one of the board members,
lately, yes.
2:30 in the morning.
Yeah. All right. We are back in session.
Yeah.
11:05. And all right, I will throw this open. My plan is to throw it open first to the attorneys if there's anything else that they have that they want to address, and then to each board member, and hopefully bring this to some resolution here shortly.
So just for clarification, so that maybe as we go through the rest of the conversation, we know what more we need to talk about. I assume the district board, I think you had represented the district board, was provided a copy of our, the charter school's red line version of the three documents. And so I guess the baseline question is, other than the issues we've talked about tonight and other than any other issues that trustees bring up later tonight, is there the assumption that anything that's not discussed tonight, the red line changes presented by the charter school, is the version that we're going off of?
I'm getting a nod yes. So okay. That's the
That's helpful, that's just to reduce the number of issues on the table.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Mrs. Polis, I'll roll it to you.
In the facilities use agreement on page 5, section 9, the charter school has proposed that it be permitted to oversee and administer the use of facilities under the Civic Center Act and retain any fees paid for its use. This is a potential loss of income for the district in addition to the other proposed losses of income referred throughout this evening. That's not something that I would be for.
All right. Can we discuss that?
Was it an Edison custodian or is it a district custodian that will be opening it up or in those kinds of things?
Then they would the no. charter would be responsible for
their own facilities,
all administration of the Civic Center Act.
Right.
No, but my question is because Mrs. Polis doesn't want to do that. So I mean, if we did her, then the district would be doing it and sending the district custodian to open it up, right?
Well, no, I don't think that's what she was suggesting.
Well, I mean, because if we're administering it, why would we direct an Edison employee to do it?
I'm not expecting them to pay for the custodian who opens it. And I know that they had some, they said that they would be the only ones who knew when they were using the facility, so it would be easier for them to orchestrate. I feel very uncomfortable giving up those fees, and that when we have to pay for the air conditioning, the wear and tear on the buildings, any all of the major things, if they're leasing it out on a regular basis, we're incurring expense that we're not getting any money back for.
So is the suggestion then, would it be fair to say that then the district would reimburse the charter school for the actual cost of utilities, since the charter school is paying the utilities costs, including for all of those night
and
evening
weekends?
Well, and
usually what we do is it's the fields that we lease out. We haven't even discussed E and F. And those would probably be building. Those would be the only rooms that people would even want to lease out if anyone ever did want to. And that hasn't even been discussed yet. You said, is that an issue? But that is an issue for me. The building's E and F still.
Yeah. Well, what about the question about the utilities?
Don't we? How much do we generally charge for these things?
Right,
Civic Center Act is a. It's a free.
It's supposed to be a revenue neutral thing. You're supposed to be charging.
So you charge them for get reimbursed for the cost.
To be charged the actual cost of the actual janitorial utilities and those sorts of things.
But the wear and tear on the air conditioning, that we're paying for the carpet, we're paying for the painting, we're paying for the fields, the maintenance of the grounds. So they're going to be getting the fees for that. But we're paying for any of the major.
They give us the
concerns.
Fees then. I mean, it's got to be a neutral situation. Whoever's the people are that are asking to utilize the facilities are going to pay a fee, and depending upon what that fee is based on, it depends on who gets the money. So
but they pay the utilities.
If they're going to pay for the utilities, electric, gas, and that sort of stuff, then. Or the custodian or whoever to come and pick it up.
I'm talking about the wear and tear, the major wear and tear on the
building. But if they're paying for it, then that allocable portion goes to the district, and that goes to utilities stays with the charter school.
How much money do we get in Civic Center Act fees here?
I have no idea what they're proposing to use this for. They were also doing the child care, which is another issue. But if they started leasing out the buildings for that type.
Well, Civic Center is different than leasing out
that's
buildings.
That's different. Right. Yeah.
Well, that was what I was going to raise. It's a minimal amount. There's a statutorily set fee in regard to what you can charge, depending on what type of group it is under the Civic Center Act. If it's a nonprofit, civic-minded, civic-dutied group.
Well, shared the fee with the minimal fee with us. To help us reimburse any of the fees, then
That's fair and reasonable.
How about if we, just for the sake of clarity, how about if we agree that we would split that fee 50-50 with the understanding, of course, the charter school is going to be paying for utilities and janitorial. You're going to have the responsibility for major maintenance on the building. So to address the wear and tear issue, we'd just say whatever that fee might be that's set, we'll split it.
I'm okay with that.
That's fine.
But you're administering it.
But we're administering it.
Yeah.
Next,
which you
next
wanted
item.
To do. Where is the budget in the new proposal? There was a narrative in the original proposal on item 31 was the total budget. Is that still the total budget that is going to be that we were supposed to be looking at for this in the latest petition? There's a marker for the budget, and there's a narrative. But there isn't a full scope budget like there is in the original petition you gave us.
I'm not sure there's a full budget in each of
them. There's not a full budget in this
in the binder, in the original binder, but which is the red line version that we're
No.
And the one we're looking at today, there is not in. I was just wondering where they were because it was.
All right, so we have one available, and they'll make a copy of that available for you. But that doesn't involve this.
That wasn't. Red lines in the budget. It was an information item we had given you previously in your original document.
In here.
Not to us, too. Yeah.
In other words, your council made no proposed changes to the budget, and so we provided you just language back on the areas where we had.
So this is only changes? Because when I was doing it line to line, it looks pretty close.
The changes that are in the red line version that was our version that your council provided you is the only changes. So those changes all show up in colored, underline it for additions.
Well,
or
I
colored,
don't have a colored version, sorry.
Or colored straw. Well, I can give you one.
No.
I have it crossed out, but it's not. I don't know how, now with all the changes, I don't know how this is going to help anymore anyway.
It might just, to me, it's easier to,
it jumps out at me. This would have been very beneficial when I was looking over it.
We sent it redlined electronically, so I don't know if that's just because when you printed it out, it wasn't
printed
on color.
Yeah, we got it bound black and white on yellow paper.
But that was submitted with the original petition?
No, the red line that I sent you was sent electronically.
Right.
So if it had been printed on a color printer, they would have seen it
color.
But it was printed apparently on just a regular district machine, so that's why they see it in black and white.
I never saw the red.
Oh. Here, remember what I was
asking? It's all Mike Seaman's fault.
If you're in here, trying to figure it out.
I bet. Sorry. Next time will be a couple.
And I didn't put the issue here, and it may have been resolved, the issue about the preschool buildings. Was there an issue on that?
I was actually going to, that was okay. An issue I was going to raise. It was not in my memorandum. In regard to the facilities
not
use agreement.
Sorry.
Provision.
This is the options?
I think I was talking about the child care. I'm sorry, not the options, but both. You tell me what you're going to say, and I'll say if that's what I wanted.
Well, they proposed to strike the entire provision about the child care.
That's what I need, the child care.
Their child care rooms.
It's on page 3.
Which page?
Page 3.
Okay, section 3. Of the facilities use agreement that was proposed, they proposed to strike the fees for use of the facilities for preschool or daycare. To the extent the charter school uses the facilities for daycare or preschool purposes, the charter school shall pay the district an annual charge of $9 per square foot. This amount shall be adjusted annually based on the state inflation indicator. My understanding is that is a provision under the current management contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put that in, I had put that into the currently proposed facilities use agreement. It's been removed. I mean, they proposed removing it, so that was an issue that I didn't have in my memo, but I wanted to.
I propose putting it back in.
So we had proposed
Page 3 of the facilities use agreement.
So we had proposed Section 3. We had proposed striking this because consistent with other agreements adopted by districts throughout the state with charter schools, this is a very unusual provision to have a separate charge for preschool or daycare on top of the charge that the charter school is paying.
Well, when this was put in, if I remember right, part of it was that this money was then going to Edison, which is the for-profit company. And so it was a profit maker for the Edison company. But now this is being run by a nonprofit. I think they should pay whatever our other child care sites pay. Because all our other child care sites are run by nonprofits, the Y, and or the city. Well, I don't know if the city's a nonprofit. I think they're losing money. But but I think, you know, I think they should pay whatever the child care, it's not a for-profit company running it, they should pay whatever we're charging at the other sites.
I'll agree to that if Edison agrees that they will charge what the Y does.
Not Edison.
I mean, well, San Jose Charter Academy.
We'll do what?
Yeah, so we're okay with being charged the same rate as other as other preschool or daycare sites, but we're not agreeing to a specific cap.
I think the right now the program is making about, from what I understand, $250,000. You can say no. Open your books.
Whatever. That's all right.
So if I'm incorrect, show me I'm wrong.
That's right. It
otherwise.
Doesn't matter, but wait.
Otherwise, charge what other nonprofits charge for daycare.
Do we regulate the rates of the city and the Y's? I mean, do they charge all same? Huh?
Our rates are comparable.
free market.
You want board direction on that? Oh, I want board direction.
Oh, okay, but all right.
We're looking at ways to the places we're going to have to cut. And now we're looking at actually losing money on something where we had money. I don't know how we can justify that to the other schools when we're going to look at cutting different programs or different services or programs for them.
Well, then let's charge $9 a square foot to all the people that are providing child care then.
Do they charge on a sliding scale? I know YASIS charges next to nothing for some.
YASIS isn't the child care program, but I mean...
But that's a child care.
But the city has a standard. I mean, they're all different. They're all different. But if we're gonna have a standard for the way nonprofits provide child care, it should be the same at all our schools.
If they agree to do a sliding scale for their families, the same way YASIS does. I believe the city was doing a sliding scale at one time. Now that they're losing money, I have no idea what they're doing. But at one time, they were.
I don't want to have. You know, I don't want to have to approve everybody's rates, but I mean, we can do that if
yeah.
you
want. I don't know what to say other than the fact that that was a program being operated by a for-profit
that's not
company,
now.
But that's not now. So.
Right, and we have nonprofits in the city that operate child cares, and we should treat them the same.
And they have a responsibility to their parents, to the community in general, to be competitive, otherwise, you know, they won't. I mean, understandably, that it's sort of a captive type facility, and that, you know, you don't. The idea is that they go right over to that aftercare and it's done. They don't have to leave that site, but it still does. You know, if it's so out of line, then I think there's going to be a lot of complaints in that, you know.
Well, it's next to nothing for YASIS. You know, on the sliding
but I'm not going to tell them what they have to charge. I will be consistent through all of our other nonprofits that we pay the same rates. That's a given. We made that established. That's you know considered quite some time ago.
We
so
established it, but then there was why ASIS at Edgewood was paying money where other people were there having their leases for free. So there wasn't consistency across the board.
There should be.
At the lowest
common denominator, then. You know, whatever it happens to be, that's what it should be. I don't.
Different than the child care players.
Yeah.
Well.
Why is this different than child care?
It's people use.
Okay.
They're using our facilities after school to provide child care.
All right, then the board direction, can I get board direction in regard to they will charge a rate? Council will confer and determine what the rate is that the district is currently charging other child care centers.
That's fine.
For lease of facilities, and that will be the rate.
That's the rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. One other thing I want to add, I don't think this is too controversial, but when I say that we're accepting the language, the council and I are going to have to, I think that we just need to attach a site map to as Exhibit A, which is referenced here, but we haven't actually attached a site map. Mm-hmm. So that way it's clear also in regard to the facilities as they're described in the text, as well as, which I think Board Member Poulos is concerned about, making sure that it's clear that the rooms currently occupied by LA County program and the district's own special ed programs are
right.
That their access to the facilities are preserved and
right.
Use the facilities are preserved.
Other items?
We had one other item that I just wanted to make sure we got on the record, especially while you've got one of your other counsel here. Yesterday, the district representatives and CSEA met, and I attended the meeting relative to the question of some proposals that CSEA had that were specific to the rights of classified employees of the district. And we drafted language, which we hope that you will agree by consensus should be included in the charter language as an amendment to Section 13, which is the employee rights section.
That language essentially provides for return rights to the district in the event that the district has a vacancy in a position of the same classification. And I know that Darren Kamea is here, who was at that meeting on your behalf yesterday. I don't know if I don't know how to get that on the record exactly, but I just wanted to make sure that was on the table.
Yeah, we discussed it in closed session.
We discussed it in closed session and gave directions to Darren and our staff.
So okay. The parties will agree that those will be the terms of element 13 of the charter petition.
As an addition,
right.
Yeah.
As
okay.
Right.
Go ahead. You've been here all night. You may as well justify your
I just wanted to caution you not to mention what was discussed in closed session. But yes, we did talk about, in terms of our return rights for CSEA and the district and the interests of both the district and having some finality with regard to separation of employment after a certain period of time and no fiscal obligation based on any return rights that may be granted. And CSEA's concern regarding the safety net that could be provided for employees who choose to go with the charter school in the event that things, for whatever reason, don't turn out to be the way they believed it would be, would have a limited right to return without disrupting the existing classified employees at the district. The language that we reached meets both needs. CSEA has stated an intent to have that as an MOU as well as even if it's in the charter, and Mr. Simmons had stated that since this is typically language that's found in the charter, if it's able to be negotiated and addressed before it's being approved, we might as well do that. So that's why this last-minute addition would be to element 13 of the charter.
I know. No, I'm giving you full range. You just let me know when. That's all. Thank you.
So that's acceptable to the board to have that as an addition to.
Right, and he
13.
Knows exactly what we've agreed to in closed session, and that
right.
It was unanimous.
Yeah, and let me just for the record.
Not going to read us our rights, are you?
No. Okay. I'll just read the bullet points of what this deal was. The employees.
You wrote that down on a little post on a little business card.
The employees who choose to be employed by the charter school for the next coming year will be treated by the district as being on a one-year unpaid leave of absence. All benefits and salary and other compensation during that period of time will be the responsibility solely of the charter school and not of the district. That one-year unpaid leave of absence expires at the end of the year unless a request is made to the board to extend it for one more year, and the board grants that at its sound discretion. During that leave period, the employee who is at the charter school will have return rights to any vacancies in their prior classification at the district. And while it's very unlikely, there is also language saying that if the employee is separated involuntarily from the charter school for essentially disciplinary reasons, that if the district receives that employee back and there's a need to mete out some type of progressive discipline based on that conduct, that the district will not be precluded from doing that. That's it.
Okay. Can we continue? All right. Mrs. Polis?
At the last meeting, and I'm sorry, I don't have the site number on here because this was a question I asked at the last meeting. When we approved the extra use of the classrooms, buildings, E&F for the remainder of the school year, I thought we would have a thorough discussion on the building's use, and I asked if we were going to have that discussion. And what we heard from Edison at that time is that they were proposing to pay $1.45 a square foot, and now it's the 3%. I still want to say that I believe that we should still have the discussion at least about those two classrooms. And I know that there was some talk about the special day class autism program that might move over there and a transition program that could move to Edgewood High School. So there were potential leasees that had been talked to. That we knew that were available because they had announced it at the SELPA meeting. So it was made to everybody. We didn't approach them, but they were making it clear that they needed a couple classrooms. I just want to say that I still think we need to have that discussion, and I know I'm only one person, so we'd have to have...
Any other comment?
Okay. It doesn't sound like we were going to get any additional fees for those funds as, and I'm...
No, I think there's bigger campuses that have more rooms available with less students than the Willowwood site.
But we need the middle school would be there, and then we could put the transition program over at Edgewood. There's no room at the high school, but it could go at the Edgewood High School because they need students with special needs need to be with their peers. So they need to be in rooms that are with their peers. So there's the junior high students can move over to the junior high, and the transition program can move into Edgewood.
There are sites that have more space.
But not with the right age groups. So, since there's nobody else for that, I will move forward. You said we agreed to the language, but there are some mistakes throughout that.
Like typos, you're saying?
Well, no. Well, like there's one place where it should have said 3%, where it says 1%. Right. That's done in several places. No, it wasn't their version because they were saying that they would pay the 3%.
They didn't do this until they didn't come in.
Mr. Simmons and I discussed that prior to the meeting. So that
was okay.
That was a typo. So
yeah, and there were several of those throughout, so I'm not agreeing to any of the typos.
It will be a consistent... that's correct. It will be a consistent 3% throughout the document. It'll be the arrangement that we have.
Okay. That's all I had.
Any other comments? Any other items brought to either of any of the three, the petition, the MOU, or the facilities use agreement? Ms. Shoemaker, excuse me.
The last item I have is on page 5 of, I believe it's the facilities use agreement. And it's section 8, furnishings and equipment. And the end of the paragraph says, this includes the portable buildings located at 1500 East Francisquito. Oh. Again.
Yeah.
Okay. Those portables have been there for years. As I stated before, when these portables were brought up, Edison was on our school sites not paying rent, not paying oversight. I think we can possibly call ourselves even on these portables.
They get credit for buying the one shelf.
And we can get a credit for letting them have our site for 8 years, not paying rent, not paying oversight.
When the county left their building at Francisquito, we paid them $1 for it. And it was over.
You mean the building?
The building that Parents Place is now in. There was an agreement that if they left, that we would buy it for a dollar.
No, they would have to tear it down.
Or yes, they could tear it down,
or
take the dollar. So I wouldn't mind language like that.
Not yet.
Page 5.
Oh, the facilities part.
Facilities use agreement.
That's why I said I'm waiting for you guys.
Operational. Okay.
No, facilities use.
That was where I was. So where are we at? What are we doing now?
They're discussing whether or not they're going to continue.
So what are we doing?
Now
they bought them.
Yeah, earlier. I mean, I
are they carried on their books? The question is, are they carried on their books?
Okay, I don't have to do it again.
No, that's it.
But it was an issue during the other
interview.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they're covered. Yeah, no.
So the discussion we've had is that the concern of the charter school is that they had invested approximately $750,000 into those buildings that the district is currently has available for its own leases. I guess our thought is this. For purposes of tonight and the interest of time, and because that doesn't relate directly to the current facility's location, how about if we simply strike that last sentence in Section 8, furnishings and equipment related to the portable buildings, with the understanding that the parties will, you know, continue discussions informally about that issue and how we might resolve that issue. But at least that takes it off the table for purposes of tonight and doesn't require us to reach some sort of agreement as to what to do with that right now.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Is that okay?
It's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
The right? Okay. And with that, I think we've come to a conclusion of this discussion matter. You have direction. You have the clarification that you needed. You're going to get roughly the 2 weeks to finalize, resolve. We don't need to see this again necessarily. And yeah, of course.
With these, right. With these,
I'll move items 7 and 8.
Wait just a second.
Presented. I'm
sorry. Well, I want.
Presented. We're making.
We were just going to say that it's.
Presented here.
Well, we were going to say let's do it as two separate items.
We are.
Move. It sounds like you're going to move for approval.
We're going to go
the petition for renewal and amendment.
As presented
to
here with the.
As present. Wait. To conform to the direction from the board given tonight.
That's exactly what I said.
All right.
We obviously have that on tape, but you also have it in, Monica, you have that also. All right. Okay, now that's with respect to the petition.
Right.
Right, correct.
All right. So, as I'm sorry, moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez. And so all in favor, signify by saying aye.
We have discussion.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is that what our attorney recommends? You gave us four options. Would you recommend us it coming back to make sure that what's in there is what we agreed to? I have a hard time signing off on something that I actually haven't seen afterwards to say that's correct. You got me right.
Right. I would say that with the clear direction from the board that this is an enforceable document if there is approval given tonight with the direction to
incorporate
conform to the discussion tonight, then that we don't need to come back.
Okay.
We can if there's a problem.
We can.
Can, but hopefully won't need to. All right. Anything else?
Well, if we move to approve and there's a problem, how do we come back?
Then we can just come back and we can put it on the consent agenda and there can be another review of the document if you would like.
Even if we've approved it.
That's the board's direction. But I would argue that it is an enforceable
document. With the direction, we've got the tape, we've got notes, we've got the direction of the board and the clarification of the wording. Yeah. Problem, bring it back.
And that is true. My concern is in regard to the timing of this, in regard to having it
July
a clear,
1st.
Enforceable document, moving it forward and having it.
Well, but also we've got moms and dads and teachers and students.
Exactly.
Want direction one way or the other.
Logistically.
I don't think that we're fundamentally together, well, based on whatever the board decides, but with after tonight's discussion, you've got we're beyond the legal realm and we're into the administrative realm. We've covered the administrative issues, and now we've got. Well, we'll see what we've got. All right, so I haven't
seen the budget
with the changes. She said she just made a few changes, but we haven't seen that. She just gave it to me this evening.
But again, that's...
But the proposed budget is the one that's been submitted with the petition already.
No,
I mean, there may be some minor revisions and things of that nature to bring it up to...
They're entitled to make minor revisions. That'll just be their revised budget.
On this...
So what I'm saying is the budget as adopted is the one that was submitted with the original petition. And then they're allowed to without, it's not a material amendment for them to make minor changes for their own use of the financial statements.
Well, the 3% versus 1% is not, I consider that a material change. And the first one said it was on a 1% basis.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen the one with the 3%. They just gave it to us this evening, and it's sitting here. But that wasn't in our lined-out document that we got. So I haven't even had a chance to review that.
But it is, your staff reviews the budget for next fiscal year, and I would anticipate that your staff would obviously review that budget to ensure that it is consistent with the board direction tonight relative to the charges to the charter school. So your staff will certainly do that financial review as part of your standard oversight. And, you know, that budget for the new fiscal year is due now. So, if you had any concerns about the budget, we would certainly be willing to discuss those with you or your staff. I don't anticipate there'll be any concerns.
Well, it's hard to say you have concerns when you haven't had a chance to review it, the changes. So I tried to review the document very thoroughly, but it wasn't in there. That's why I asked the question, and that's why they gave it to me this evening.
Any other discussion?
So,
it's okay. I'll let them finish. What has been suggested is that there be a staff review of the current document, and if there is the most updated budget, and if there is a concern, it'll be reported out to the board. The remedy being a notice to cure, and to that they need to cure the budgetary issues that we see if it's not consistent with the terms of the charter petition.
I feel more comfortable reading the whole document, but I'm...
Anything else?
Nothing else.
Shoemaker?
Okay. I will clearly be voting no on this petition. We are in the middle of a contract that took 18 months to negotiate. I see no reason that it is being renewed in the middle. I do not feel that Edison is ready to go independent, and we discussed several of the issues. I do not feel the contract and the petition, the facilities use agreement, is fair to the district, and for those reasons, I will be voting no.
Mr. Spence? Okay, we have a motion and second. Do I need to repeat the motion and second?
No.
All right. With that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-2 with Mrs. Polis and Ms. Shoemaker.
Charter Academy, so use agreement operational memorandum,
It's been moved by Mike Spence, seconded Eileen Miranda Jimenez, to approve the San Jose Edison Academy Facilities Use Agreement Operational Memorandum of Understanding in accordance with the changes that discussed here this evening. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion passes 3-2. With Sandy Pollitz and Jessica Shoemaker saying no. You know, if you need to leave or you want to leave, you're certainly welcome. If you'd like to stick around for more excitement, we're going to move on to item number 12. And
thanks to the board for their patience on this.
Gentlemen, thank you very much, and all the hard work over the last couple of weeks, and especially Thursday night. Yeah, okay. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, all involved.
I turn it over to Ellie on the...
Thank you. On the instructional materials.
Instructional materials. Meeting.
Item number 12.
All right. Earlier this spring, the board adopted a course outline for a new class, Honors U.S. Government. That class is part of the sequence of classes leading into our IB program. So to go along with that new course outline, we have a co-basic adoption. So this title, Introduction to Comparative Politics, will be used with the current U.S. government text. It's on display over in the ERC. I meant to bring it over this evening, but forgot. It's been on display for about 2 weeks and will remain on display through the end of the month.
Second.
It's been moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Jessica Shoemaker, to approve or to receive, to accept for first reading the instructional materials as presented. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Item number 13 on the East San Gabriel Valley. Oh, excuse me. You know what? Okay. Item number 13 is an issue regarding the East San Gabriel Valley Special Education Local Planning Area Plan. And then 14 is the San Jose Edison Academy. We will deal with those separately. This is an issue. You want to
yes,
go ahead?
It was,
sorry.
At the request of the superintendents of the SELPA, they requested that the item be brought back. We cannot bring it back, really, or to be discussed unless you that voted against it, somebody wants to reconsider. If you don't want to, if nobody wants to reconsider, then it goes away. But
I do have one question. And, you know, because when we talked about this last time, obviously we're against changing the government structure. But when you read the transfer stuff, it said that this was going to cost us money. But my understanding is actually the SELPA would end up with $580,000 extra, and then obviously we would get a share of that. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So I mean that's different information than we had last time. I'm willing to move to reconsider our vote against the East San Gabriel Valley Special Education Local Planning Area Plan.
When I saw this on the agenda, I contacted staff to get a couple of clarifying questions. One of the questions was, I understand that we are projecting that they are going to bring in $585,000. Have you had the opportunity to find out what their costs are? Meaning?
I don't know the specific cost anticipated for these schools. What I was told both by Leslie, who's the accountant, and by Mr. Scavarna, who's the president of the Superintendent's Council, is that historically the charter schools' cost for special education services has been less than the other LEAs in the SELPA.
But we don't actually know, because we keep being told that they're bringing in $585,000. Yes, they will be bringing it in, but there is also services that they're going to be using. The next question I asked, and it's something that...
Was there a second?
Not yet. Well, Let her just comment and we'll go.
Well, the second part was, and I didn't bring it up at the last meeting because I assumed that other board members would remember this. Above and beyond the 80-20 funding, there was an issue of the services being provided. For example, Azusa Unified has the hearing, a deaf and hard of hearing program, and they were being paid a flat fee for the services for the year. I think it was around $500,000. But if West Covina Unified didn't have a student in that program, we were still getting a share taken out, whereas another school district could have 20 students and be paying the same amount as West Covina Unified. And so that was one of the issues being worked on with the funding model within the SELPA. And I understand from our conversation that they are making strides towards correcting that. Were you able to confirm that or not?
Yes, the allocation model now has specific costs per program, and even though you're not charged back for a specific student within the program, there's average costing for that program. So if we're not participating in a program, we don't have a charge.
Okay, and have they gone through all of the programs, because that was another issue?
Yes, the model is in place. Each program's individual. There's subcommittees for the program costing as well as the actual allocation model. And they're going through everything with a fine-tooth comb. Like, we donate, I guess you can use that, Cortez, towards that. And in our contract, it says that it includes one custodian for 8 hours a day. But they're also giving us an additional credit for this 8 hours for the same custodian. And that came up in part of the review. And we're one of the only districts that has a specific contract for those rooms and what the actual reimbursement is. So everything's gone through, whether it's revenues or it's expenses, specifically to make sure it's very clear the allocation method is unique to that program and everyone's treated, all the districts are treated in the same manner.
Do we have any of the documentation on what they found in terms of the cost of programs?
Yes, so actually the allocation model has it by program, the cost.
Okay.
It's a very detailed program, but we can get you that.
You brought up
the comment about, yeah, the... they're bringing this money in revenue. Mm-hmm. What it is Pomona left that vacancy, that 800, 900 students. So we've lost revenue, but our overall program costs are pretty much the same, and our fixed overhead's the same, so we're picking up more cost. If we bring in the charter students, who usually historically have a low utilization rate or a lower cost per student, this is going to help everyone in the SELPA, all the districts, by spreading the cost, getting more students in there, so you've got those synergies.
Do we know why the two schools are interested in becoming part of our SELPA?
I don't. I don't for fact on this, but I know, like, Roland, who is our previous assistant superintendent of business services, who thought the SELPA was a bad idea, now is actually looking to contract for services with them. So we can find out if that's important, but the...
I think it is important that the district who now wants to contract for services with ours will not accept their own charter school as part of their SELPA. I'm just curious as to why, and if there's not an underlying issue on why they won't accept them.
I'm not sure. Are you referring to Roland? Or?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think what they're trying to do with Roland is cherry pick. Our services are cheaper for certain programs, so they want to come and get those services in our district, which are cheaper. And I would have an issue with them doing that. I think you're either all in or all out. You can't cherry pick. It would be my preference if I got to vote. With these charter schools, they're all in, and it benefits us. And again, their utilization is lower, so it shouldn't increase any program costs.
Before I would be willing to reconsider this, I would like to see how they have corrected the allocation models and what's being used now. It's not on our agenda for reconsideration to begin with. Can we even move forward tonight?
Yes, you can. As long as one of the individuals who that voted last time is asked to reconsider it.
Even though it's not agendized as a reconsideration, because normally...
I talked to two attorneys about it, and that's what the answer that I got.
Okay, because we usually have it as two agenda items. One is the reconsideration, one
exactly.
is the vote.
Exactly. And you can do it two ways. You could just one board member do it, or you can actually, take a poll to to reconsider or a vote to reconsider and then take the item. But or the easiest way, which is what I was told, is just as long as one member requests it to be considered, then it can be, then we can take action on it.
I have Mike Spence has made a motion to reconsider. Is there a second?
I'll
second it. Been seconded by Miranda Jimenez.
Isn't there one quick question? Wasn't there something, though, too, when I was going over numbers, that this is growth money, you know, because of, you know, because there's an issue with the funding from the state that you get funded for growth that you normally wouldn't get. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, believe it's something like that because they're looking at it as a penalty. They look at the prior year in this.
And
it's actually probably going to get us more than this $500,000 because of that growth money. Mm-hmm. I think Leslie, the accountant with the SELPA, was estimating closer to $1,000 per student instead of the $600.
Jeez. All right, it's been moved and seconded to reconsider. All in
favor? I have a question.
Oh, excuse me.
The IQ Academy, it was my understanding that Maria did not want to be the superintendent that went to those SELPA meetings, and that it's a superintendent's council. Has she changed her mind, and is she going to be the superintendent that represents the IQ Academy?
I believe right now the superintendent's council and the SELPA is working on new language that will eventually come to the board for approval as part of the governance plan of how all of the LEAs in the SELPA will be represented. They apparently had drafted something. The council for the SELPA said that they couldn't do it that way, and I think it's sort of on the agenda for next fall how they will make modifications to the plan to address that.
Too bad they didn't do that before they're bringing it to us. Pomona was still receiving services, my understanding, and I don't know to date, but they were still receiving services but not being billed back for those services, so it ended up the remaining schools in the SELPA were paying for fees for Pomona students that they weren't being that the SELPA wasn't being reimbursed for. Has that been rectified, or have you heard anything about that?
Honestly, I think the last I heard is that there was an outstanding bill, and the SELPA was still attempting to collect it from Pomona. I don't know the status of that.
So it, no matter how much money our district brings in, if they are serving students that they're not being paid for, that money is going to be eaten away.
I would agree that was the actual situation, and I'm not 100% clear, but I think we're maybe mixing a couple different things. There was the insolvency that was split up amongst all the districts.
Right. This is different than that.
I understand. And that's the part that Pomona hasn't come up front to pay yet. And the SELPA as a whole has agreed to pursue that. But I don't believe there's any students that are going in free. In fact, now with our new model.
Well, they were because it was brought up at the CAC meeting. So, I mean, unless they misinformed us.
I'm sorry, at what meeting?
At the CAC, the Community Advisory Council. It came up at one of those meetings. And so unless they misinformed the representatives there, then.
And I'm not sure what point in time you're talking about now, so we can go back and review that. But strongly, with the allocation, there's actually a group with the administration, the cost allocation model, it being fairly charged out to everyone, in fact. Other districts utilizing our services are concerned because now we're charging back true cost for that program, which is significantly higher. So they're now trying to charge us back at a higher rate. So there's a lot of things happening with the model when we rectify the true cost. And as far as I know for this year, everybody is being charged appropriately. But we can go back and look at that. I haven't heard that at allocation meetings, superintendents meetings, or any other meeting.
It was since they left us. So I think it's been 3-4 years since they've left. So I don't know if it's been taken care of this fiscal year or not. And maybe it did come to someone's attention because they kept trying to rectify that.
One of the biggest challenges with the SELPA is accounting for all the students because students come in and out of the different districts and move around too. And that's one of the challenges they're trying to face. But I'm not aware of any district not paying their share right now.
Right.
Or for this fiscal year.
Well, and that was Pomona, and they weren't part of the SELPA, but they were still serving Pomona students.
It could have been in a prior year, and I can look at that for you.
And so does this have to be voted on tonight, or can we wait until we get the questions answered about who's going to be the representing the IQ Academy and to make sure that there isn't any district getting services that they're not paying for?
The superintendent's council has asked us to bring it back at the earliest time that we can because they would like this to go into effect July 1st. So the next meeting is our 28th, which is really short notice. That's why we're asking. Our intention was to put this on the agenda for reconsideration. We apologize for any agenda errors here, but we'd like you to reconsider it now if possible. Again, it's very financially a benefit of our district and every other district in the SELPA. There really isn't, when you look at the pros and cons, there's probably things you need to work out with the wording and oversight, which we can't control now anyways. When it comes up to a vote, you can. The one thing here is getting those dollars, again, the ADA, as fast as we can, and postponing it only really hurts our district.
But is there any way that they could get together if we did not sign this? Because they really want us to. And to get that the language that needs to be done in this fiscal year. And sometimes if people need to get things done, they will, but it seems like this has been an issue for over a year.
I really don't know. My understanding that I'm not even sure if Sarah is still there. I think there's only one superintendent's council meeting between now and June 30th. I don't know if that would be time to do what they need to do, have the council look at it, and then get it out to all the member districts. I don't see that happening.
Can we approve it with can we communicate to the SELPA or the superintendent's council this board's concerns? I mean, hopefully it's approved, but also communicate the concerns and expectations that we would have. Is that
It's not a problem at all. We can do that directly with the president of the superintendent's council as well as with the council. They definitely
submit it in writing to them.
Yes,
from our district.
Yeah, they definitely want to open up communication that was clearly communicated to us, that communications hasn't been open in the past, and they want to open that communication so they can get everything resolved.
Because I think what you're hearing is a lot of trepidation.
Well, and I would like it made clear to the superintendent's council that this board was very well aware of what was going on. They came before us a couple of times, and we still turned it down. So anybody saying that, we didn't know what was going on when we were voting is absolutely incorrect.
I don't think anybody made that comment. We just wanted to be clear with the allocation methodology. I know I presented a while ago to you, and we haven't given an update recently. So if there's any questions about that, we can answer those.
Again, I hope you approve this. When we talked about this May 12th, we had different information on the financial piece than we do today. So this is just to reconsider.
All right, we have a motion to reconsider, moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
I move that we approve the local plan for the SELPA as presented.
Moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez to approve the local plan as presented. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-2.
I move that we reconsider the rejection of the East San Gabriel Valley SELPA area plan, San Jose Academy.
I'll second it. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-2.
I move that we approve the local plan for the East San Gabriel Valley SELPA San Jose Edison as presented.
Moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Lynn Miranda Jimenez.
Better at that. I need to still
to approve the local plan for the East San Gabriel Valley Special Education Local Planning Area for San Jose Edison Academy. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-2. Next item on the agenda is item number 23, the resolution to establish a classification of fund balance. It would appear to me that this is a matter that's done in accordance with Government Accounting Standards Board number 54 to establish this at 3%. Is that correct?
We have to establish that.
We have to establish a fund balance, and so we're going to, and you're recommending at 3%, which
right,
is the
economic reserve.
Mm-hmm. Is there a motion to that?
I'll move this.
Thank you. Moved by Cami Pola, seconded by Eileen Moreno Jimenez, to adopt the resolution to establish clarification of fund classification of fund balance as presented. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion passes 5-0. We have a Board of Education meeting on June 28th, and I suspect it will be shorter than tonight, and
no
we are
way.
Adjourned at 12.
Really, no, we're going to start going over all the policies, aren't we?
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't miss that.
Hold
on. Hang on. We are not adjourned yet. We are not adjourned. We have Board of Education discussion item.
I just have two quick things.
Go ahead.
One of them is I would like agendized next time discussion and possible action regarding the SRO officer at West Covina High. And then the next item, and I think it could just be for discussion at this point, is we now have Edgewood High School open. We have Coronado High School with an ASB. So I wanted to have discussion about possibly having a representative from each school serve as a student board member, where maybe they rotate, or one person represents and talks to the other two so that we are covering a bigger portion of the school district.
Anything else? Anybody else?
I think we have a policy on the student rep one that needs to come up.
We'll have staff look into that and make recommendations.
And
right.
Part of that discussion will be the current board policy and what may need to be
now, changed. I just have a quick question. Is the SRO, is that just going to be part of the budget thing? We're going to talk about as part of the budget thing?
From our update, what I understand is that the city has cut funding for the SRO officer, which we currently pay 50% of the salary. So I wanted to have discussion on whether or not the district should go ahead and pay the 100% to keep the officer. You know, campus safety is one of our top priorities. So.
Edison is security.
All right, we are adjourned at 12:05. Thank you.
Thank you.